Why bother believing in marriage at all if we've been so badly hurt by the effects of divorce? That's the question I'd like to discuss with you today on Heart in a Drawer, the podcast for adult children of divorce. I'm glad to be back with you today. I've been taking some time to heal from my own divorce, but this idea has been turning around in my mind, and I think this week is a good time to discuss it with you. And the thing that I've been thinking about is why I still believe in marriage. Now, this is a big, big thing for me to think about. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I have been a child of divorce myself twice over. My father was a child of divorce. And when I was married to a child of divorce for 21 years. And I've had a very difficult marriage myself. I've already written and spoken about this, so this is no surprise. But my marriage was plagued by being unequally yoked, and alcoholism, and emotional abuse, and at the end, infidelity. Those are all very serious problems, and it would be a good reason for many people to say, yeah, I'm done. I don't really think that marriage is for me. This is just too hard. And I have been thinking about that myself, not because I want to entertain that concept, but I am saying it is tempting after all of the hurt that I've been through, not just in my marriage, but as a child, all the suffering that I went through in the after effects of my parents' divorce, and then even seeing generational effects in the other generations before me of the fallout they experienced as children of divorce. So it's a very sensitive question. I think it cuts all the way down to the core of what we're struggling with because we've been affected by the pain. So one of the things that got me thinking about this is I have a pond on my property, and in the springtime, there's a pair of wood ducks that come and visit the pond. So it's a male and female pair, and they mate for life. So, unfortunately, we live too close to a county road, and I don't think our pond is quiet enough for these ducks to build a nest. I would love nothing more than to see them raise their little ducklings in our woods. I just don't think we have enough acreage for them. But when they come, every year they come and navigate our pond, kind of look around, swim in it, check it out. I'm always impressed that they're still together. And seeing them together as mates for life gives me great hope. It's kind of taking me back to the Garden of Eden before sin came into the world, and this is the way that God intended things to be. Not just for certain animals who mate for life, but absolutely for people. And we can learn more about that when we go to Genesis and when we go to chapter 2, when Adam sees Eve for the first time. So in verse 18 of the NIV version, it says, "The Lord God said, 'It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him.'" Now, I've always been intrigued by this because we're talking about a sinless world. And up to this point, God has said, "It is good, it is good, it is good," everything he created. And here he says, "It is not good." And it's because people are created in God's image. God is Father, Son, Holy Spirit. He's in relationship with himself. And he created people to be in relationship with each other. And I love that God says, "I will make a helper suitable for him." So Eve was to be complementary to Adam. She was to be someone who would come alongside him and help him in everything that he was intended to do. So we go down to verses 21 and 22. God causes Adam to fall into a deep sleep. He takes one of his ribs and fashions the woman out of the rib. And then we come to when Adam sees Eve for the first time. Verse 23, the man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh." That is what marriage is about. It's becoming one flesh, one unit to glorify God. And I've talked about on a previous episode that, in my opinion, selfishness is the reason for every single divorce, other than possibly some forms of mental illness. That's pretty rare, but across the board, every other divorce is affected by selfishness. So selfishness is attacking that one flesh unit that God intended marriage to be. I can say in my own marriage, and I had an episode about alcoholism, as the alcoholism advanced, the selfishness advanced. And so by the time that my ex decided to leave, I have described it as catastrophic selfishness. In the DSM for the alcohol use disorder, one of the criteria is you continue to drink even though it costs you in terms of family relationships. So in advanced alcoholism, selfishness just overtakes the person. It's very sad because it doesn't just affect them. Obviously, it affects the people closest to them. And that's what happened in my marriage. When I think about what happened in other marriages in my family, it was infidelity, which also touched me at the very end of my story. But in the other family divorces, infidelity was the main reason that the marriages broke up. And I'm actually going to do my next episode on that super hard topic. So I hope you'll join me next time for that. But I love that the Bible tells us the way it's supposed to be, the way that it was always intended to be. And in my healing process, I've been going back and reading my journals. I might have mentioned on here before that I've kept journals since I was 10 years old. So I have a whole entire bookshelf of them. And I've been going back and looking at some things, learning some things, reflecting on some things. And one thing that I've noticed that's very consistent among all of the entries, besides the heartache, because I was in such a difficult situation for so long, 21 years, every single time I ended an entry, it was with hope that things could be different, with hope that God would carry me through, hope that God had a better future in mind for me. And I never let go of that hope. And I've been receiving care from a Stephen minister at my church, and she told me hope is one of the strongest emotions that can get us through. And if you had asked me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if I was a person who was very hopeful, I probably would have said no, because I was just so caught up in the fight that I felt like hope was a luxury that I really couldn't afford. I was in survival mode amidst all the abuse that I was suffering. However, my journals are proof that I chose hope despite everything that was going on. And I think it's because I knew that I was changing. Despite my desire for everything in our marriage to change, I couldn't make that happen. But I knew with God's help, I could change myself. And that is why I want to say that I still believe in marriage, because I think there is no better way. There is no other institution that God has created to strip us of our selfishness and make us more like Christ. I'd like to read a couple of scriptures to you that I think really illustrate this point, and then I'm going to bring in some voices from Tim Keller and Gary Thomas, who writes so powerfully and eloquently about this subject. So first, let's go to Ephesians 5. It's the chapter that is very well known for talking about submission. People don't like that word in our very individualistic society. But here's the key, the heart of it. It says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. That's Ephesians 5:21, NIV. So even in a difficult marriage like the one I was in, I could submit out of my reverence for Christ, out of my worship for Jesus and accepting his lordship over me. And I could show acts of love and kindness, even if they weren't going to be returned, because I knew that's what God wanted me to do, and he was empowering me to do it. So it was a way that I was growing, even though the other side of the problem wasn't really changing. I was changing because Christ was empowering me to become more like him and less like myself. And that was a very, very powerful change in me. And I can track it in my journals over time that through the suffering I endured, he actually shaped me to be more and more and more like him. And that is all to his credit. I take no credit for that. That is his work in me. And I'm just so grateful that he chose me to walk with him through that and make me more like him in that struggle. So the second verse I'd like to look at is Romans 12:10. We're going to start with the NIV version. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. So being devoted is such an important thing to do in marriage because it's a day after day grind, but it's a way to be shaped day after day when we're devoted to someone, no matter what the situation is, what their moods are, what kind of season that you're in. And that's how our love can grow to be more Christ-like. That's what happened for me. And I like different versions of this second portion of the verse. NIV says, honor one another above yourselves. And then we look at the NLT, one of my favorite versions. It says, take delight in honoring each other. And then the one I really like is the ESV, is outdo one another in showing honor. So if we're trying to outdo one another, we're always trying to one up another in kind of a fun and playful way that, you know, I love you more and here's how I'm going to show you. And I think that marriage gives us the opportunity to do that better really than any other relationship that we have because we're so closely united. And that's what I always hoped to do myself. That's what I always hoped for myself. When I ended those journal entries, I wanted to choose that hope that's what marriage looked like. Even if it didn't look like that in my day-to-day life, I knew there were marriages that did look like that. And I think that one important aspect of choosing to believe in marriage is finding good examples that we can see that are really working the way that God intended. So an example I return to often in my mind is my great-grandparents. I was blessed to be the first great-grandchild, so I was able to have several years of memories with them before they passed when I was an adolescent. So my great-grandma was an introvert. She was quiet, very sensitive by nature, a very loving and generous person. She was a farmer's wife, so she did everything around the farm. There wasn't anything that she didn't know how to do. She especially loved the cooking, taking care of the animals and her flowers. And then I think about my great-grandpa, in many ways opposite from her. He was more extroverted. He was fun-loving. He had a great sense of humor. He was light-hearted. And I remember having lunch with them on the days that we would go to the farm. And I think about this quiet appreciation that they had for each other, that they needed each other. They depended on each other. He would go out in the fields all day long and work the farm to make their living, and she took care of everything at home. And they loved each other in this very devoted way. And neither one of them thought themselves better than the other one. They both honored and held each other up. I never heard them say an unkind word to each other. They were just my ultimate example of how a husband and wife should treat each other. And I think the reason that they did is because their faith was so important to them. They were both very devoted in their faith. And I think that was their anchor, and it got them through all kinds of things. They weathered those changes because they were committed to each other in faith. And I think about them when I think, well, when I'm tempted to lose hope in this culture that is so focused on me, me, me. I think about my great-grandparents, and I think there is a possibility that that kind of love exists because I've seen it for myself. And that gives me hope. I just wanted to also read a few portions of these two wonderful books. This one is The Meaning of Marriage, and it's by Timothy Keller. And I'm just going to pull a little quote out of page 22 in here. And this is referring to when Adam sees Eve for the first time. He says, "Everything in the text proclaims that marriage, next to our relationship to God, is the most profound relationship there is. And that is why, like knowing God himself, coming to know and love your spouse is difficult and painful, yet rewarding and wondrous. The most painful, the most wonderful. This is the biblical understanding of marriage, and there has never been a more important time to lift it up and give it prominence in our culture." So I agree with that because, as you know, the divorce rate just keeps going up, and this is true for Christians as well as non-Christians. So we've got to believe in the sake of marriage because God created it, and it's God's idea, and it's a wonderful and beautiful idea because it belongs to God. And it's not something that is easy to attain, but it is possible with God's help. Here's another point that he makes about our culture versus God's idea. He says, "After all, our culture makes individual freedom, autonomy, and fulfillment the very highest values, and thoughtful people know deep down that any love relationship at all means the loss of all three. You can say, 'I want someone who will accept me just as I am,' but in your heart of hearts, you know that you are not perfect, that there are plenty of things about you that need to be changed, and that anyone who gets to know you up close and personal will want to change them. And you also know that the other person will have needs, deep needs, and flaws. That all sounds painful, and it is, and so you don't want all that. Yet it is hard to admit to the world or to yourself that you don't want to be married." I just want to pull those values out again. He says individual freedom, autonomy, and fulfillment are the highest values in our culture, and marriage means the loss of all three. But what we gain is unity and harmony and companionship and ultimate fulfillment in Christ if we're willing to lay down our selfishness and serve one another and outdo one another in honor and love. That's the adventure of marriage that I think is worth pursuing. I want to bring in another voice here from Gary Thomas from his wonderful book, Sacred Marriage. And he's talking about an incident he had with his wife where she was upset about something that he didn't think was very important, but this is how God transformed him. He said, "Notice the process here. I had to learn to better understand Lisa before I could truly respect her, and I had to respect her before I could fully love her. This is a tremendously spiritually therapeutic process, an emptying of myself, so I can grow more in my love for others." Charles Williams refers to a mutual invasion, breaking down both selves, so that both can be transformed by the love both receive. I needed to be broken down so that I could be transformed. I think about my marriage. Even though it failed, it transformed me more than anything else that I've been through. And the pain of divorce, whether we're suffering from it ourselves or as adult children of divorce, can transform us in the same way if we surrender it to God and ask Him to help us be transformed through it. I also think that marriage itself will transform us if we are willing to lay down our selfishness and honor, respect, and love the other person without our selfishness getting in the way. These are my thoughts today. This is why I still believe in marriage. I hope that you do too. I hope that the enemy Satan has not stolen your joy, has not stolen your hope, has not stolen the desires you have to possibly be married someday, that you can say, I'm going to do whatever God calls me to do because I want to honor him. I want to honor him with my life. I want to honor him with my choices. And I don't want to have a root of bitterness spring up in my heart. I want to be transformed to Christ's likeness every day. And if God so chooses to use marriage to do that for me, that's one of the best gifts he could ever give me. So I'm praying that this episode will help you see that marriage is still beautiful because it's God's idea, because there's no better way for us to be stripped of our selfishness and to become more like Christ. And I thank you for listening today. You can find the links to the Bible verses in the books in the show notes.